on, FA Nation. Welcome back. This is the Fantasy Alarm NASCAR DFS podcast. I'm Dan Malin, joined by the FSWA three-time NASCAR Writer of the Year, Matt Sells. Matt, how are you? It's kind of been a big week for NASCAR news.
It has. It has not been a slow week. That's for dang sure. There's news all over the place. It's also been a big week for the site, in case anybody has already logged on by the time they're listening to this. It's down to one site, so that's what I was busy doing over the weekend and early this week, was helping the tech team merge the sites back together. Don't worry, all the DFS stuff is still there. You can still find it. It's all in the menus. You can also just go /DFS, and you'll get there. Been a busy week all around for F1. There's a ton of F1 news, ton of NASCAR news. Sponsorship news in NASCAR, penalties, disqualifications. Where do we want to start?
Well, I guess we could just start with a quick recap of Pocono, just because it's not my favorite track. I kind of made note of that in both my playbooks this weekend. I also played much later than I normally do, and I was having a pretty good DFS day until Ross Chastain. I guess if you look at it in slow-mo, it's almost like he put himself in the wall.
Kind of like the Kevin Harvick trying to wreck Chase Elliott
last year, because
he freaked himself out.
It wasn't like I watched that and I just saw there's Denny's revenge. I mean, Denny may have felt pretty good about it in the moment. I'm pretty sure he did enjoy it. That did kind of break me. It didn't cost me everything. I only played the Chrome Horn for $80 max, and I lost about 30. So other than that, I was kind of flirting with breaking even, kind of doubling up on the day. Not a huge DFS day, but I really don't enjoy Pocono. But that is one of the better Pocono races that I've seen in recent memory. The racing was pretty good. It seemed much more possible to pass, which I don't really say too much about Pocono. But overall, the racing was good. And then the drama that unfolded after the race was probably even better.
Yeah, for sure. I caught snippets of the race, not the whole thing. I was heading over to a friend's house for a welcome to town barbecue, basically. But what I did see, it was fantastic. It was better Pocono racing than we normally see, right? Because we kind of went over how passing is tough here. They tend to get spread out pretty good during the race and whatnot, but that didn't necessarily seem to be the case this time around. So that was nice to see. It's also now a historic Pocono race because it was the first time a winner of a NASCAR race has been disqualified since 1960, I believe is what I saw. It's also the first time that somebody has won a NASCAR race without leading a single lap, because Chase Elliott never led a lap last week, and finishing third, he winds up winning because apparently the JGR guys had tape where they weren't supposed to. So, and from what my understanding is the reason why it wasn't caught until post-race is apparently in pre-race tech, they don't take off the wrap, which makes sense.
That makes sense.
And because you don't want to force the team to do more work and rewrap stuff and whatever. So they couldn't detect it because it was under the wrap. But in post-race tech, they take the wrap off the cars. And then they discovered it. So that would be why it was deemed legal to start the weekend and then deemed illegal because they put the wrap, it was under the wrap. So not great. Michael McDowell also apparently got fined a ridiculous, his crew chief got fined a bunch of money. McDowell lost points because they were messing with a part like Brad Keselowski tried to do earlier this year.
He basically needs to win twice to get in the playoffs now, right?
Depends, I guess. I have to double check where he is in the standings because you got to be top 30 to make the playoffs, right? If you win and you're outside the top 30, you don't automatically get a bid. So I have to double check where he sits exactly in the points because, it's possible that he might need to win to get back into the top 30 and then win again to actually make it count towards the playoffs. So, there's quite a lot of stuff there. Kyle Busch still doesn't know where he's going to go. Doesn't really have a sponsor lined up yet. So, And Kurt Busch is injured. Still dealing with concussions.
Yeah. Ty Gibbs kind of came in short notice into the 45. Had a pretty good day. For the first two stages, it was pretty much he was just getting a feel for it. Obviously, new car without practice. Hell of a gamble, but he still grabbed a top 20 in his Cup Series debut. He'll be back in the car this week in the 45 for a road course, and he's excelled on this type of track before. Very curious.
Wasn't his first Xfinity race at the Daytona road course?
Yeah, and he won it at the right price of like $4,900 in Xfinity.
Yeah. As we're recording this, by the way, it's Wednesday night at about 10:45 Eastern. He is not yet in the DK DFS pool. I have messaged DK about, well, is he going to be added? Because you put out the prices after the Kurt Busch news.
He'll be added.
Came out. And by the way, he is, you can bet him at 100-1 on the DK Sportsbook right now. Might not be bad to sprinkle a couple of bucks down there. I mean, hell, if everybody in the country is playing the Mega Millions this weekend to try to win $1 billion, may as well sprinkle a couple of extra bucks down on DK for or wherever you can bet him. But he's going off at about 100-1 right now.
Does he have odds to finish as the top Toyota?
Let me check. I have it open, so let me see what DK. Again, I'm only looking at DK because this is basically the main book that I can actually see the odds for. Because like I can't see FanDuel where I live. Let's see. Does he have odds for top Toyota? He is going off at 10-1 as the top Toyota.
It's not terrible.
If you want to feel how disrespected this is, he's 10-1. Bubba's 50-1 on DK for the top Toyota.
I got him at 100-1.
I know. You messaged me. You said you didn't know.
But I don't feel as good about it now that Ty Gibbs, as crazy it is, I feel less optimistic about that bet since Ty Gibbs is in the car than when I thought Kurt still had a shot at it.
Yeah, Truex and Kyle are 5-2. Hamlin and Bell are 7-2. Ty Gibbs is 10-1. Bubba's 50-1. And Daniel Kvyat is 100-1, who's a former F1 driver.
All right, we will get to the Indianapolis, the road course preview shortly. There are some announcements, though, in terms of, content going forward the rest of the season and into the future for years to come.
Yeah. So we've been doing some digging. You know, we like to look up analytics. We like to look at SEO stuff. We like to look at all that stuff when making decisions on directions of where things are headed. And frankly, Dan and I have been talking for a little while about paring down the NASCAR stuff because it's just quite a lot to come up with like, you know, 3 days basically, and we've added some F1 and some indie bets and whatnot. So it turns out that you all love the NASCAR podcast, which is fantastic. Thank you all for supporting this and listening to it and whatnot. And you all are listening to quite a lot of it too, based on the analytics. So that's great. What this leads to is the track breakdown will no longer be written. Essentially, we're doing track breakdowns in the podcast anyway. So it's basically duplicating everything. So there's not really necessarily a point to put content out that basically nobody is reading compared to the other stuff. So that won't be put out. The playbook and example lineups are still sticking around. Those things are going strong, so don't worry about that. Projections will still be here. Prize pick stuff will continue either in the Discord channel or written piece of content, or perhaps you get me on camera one of these days and spit out some video stuff. But yeah, so going forward, the track breakdown won't be being put out there because it's just not really being terribly well received. So it's just not really worth, putting stuff out that's not getting eyeballs on it. So playbook will still be there, projections, example lineups, podcast. That kind of stuff will still be here, though.
All right. I guess we will now turn our attention to this weekend's action, unless you have anything else.
Nope. Cool. Let's go ahead and start breaking down the Indy Road Course before it breaks itself.
Well, all three series this weekend are in Indianapolis. However, the trucks are running Indianapolis Raceway Park. It's the first time, I think, 11 or 12 years that NASCAR has returned to that track. It's kind of a It's a short track. It's flat. It's like a Martinsville Richmond hybrid. It is like 0.68 miles in length, so very short. But the turn radius is not as tight as it is as Martinsville, so they can obviously maintain higher speeds. So it's a little bit bigger. So the trucks will be there this week. They have practice early Friday morning, and then they have qualifying Friday afternoon. Friday is actually kind of a loaded schedule. It's riddled with Truck Series practice and qualifying, the Truck Series race at night, Xfinity practice and qualifying on the road course, ARCA's mixed in. Pretty fun weekend for racing with all three series, and we get F1, which you'll be covering this week before they take their month off for summer.
Yes.
So I will have truck playbook up Friday morning. I will have it updated with practice notes throughout the day. I will be at work, so bear with me there. And then following qualifying, I'll be doing core plays for the trucks, and I'll have those posted before probably 7 p.m., and then I'll try to hit up the Discord when I get home from work if I'm out early enough.
Yeah, by the way, it's a late start on Friday for the trucks. It's 9 Eastern.
9 p.m., which I don't mind, to be honest with you.
Short track truck racing under the lights should be a pretty fun time.
And they have the ARCA race, too, at 6. So if that race, for whatever reason, goes long, it might even be a later race. Yes. Do not ask Bob Parkers if the track has lights. If they're starting at 9 p.m., they obviously have lights.
Yes.
Xfinity Road Course racing Saturday afternoon, and then we get the Cup Series. And I got to say, I know last year's Indy Road Course race was an absolute mess. There were two massive cautions at two separate times in the race because of curbing and turtle shells and all that crap. I absolutely love this track. I do not want to see them go back to the oval. I love the layout. This gave us one of the best Xfinity races when they debuted at this track. And last year,
it was like a three-wide pass in a two-wide spot. Like, yeah. It was insane.
I mean, I want to see a much better race this year because last year's race was such a disaster for DFS and betting that I don't want to see any screw-ups because I love this road course race. But I'm very excited for this week. It's a road course, so the DFS strategy is kind of like, I don't want to say dumbed down, but it is a little more simplified. But
a little bit.
Yeah. All right. So we'll dive in. Chase Elliott is the top price driver this week, 10,600 on DraftKings. If you consider the disqualification following Pocono, he has either finished first or second in his last five races. I mean, if you don't
certainly no worse than third in the last five races.
Correct. Yeah.
It's clearly the power of the stash, by the way. I mean, think about it. He started off strong, had the stash. For some reason, shaved it off. And when he shaved it off, he finished outside the top 21 for four straight races. Grew it back. Hasn't finished worse than eighth going back to Sonoma. And after Sonoma, which is like after the Father's Day weekend break, he's finished first, second, and third slash first. Depending on if you count, you know, disqualification or not. And so, yes, it's clearly the power of the stash that's helping him, right? It's not the Hendrick cars. It's not the fact that he's very good at driving. It's none of that. It's just the stash. No, seriously, though, now he gets a road course. Like, do we really expect this streak to end it this week? I don't think so. I mean, there's clearly a reason. The fact that you can still get Chase at 12-5 on DK as the top Chevy is pretty ridiculous, in my opinion. He's the favorite at 4-1 on there, too. And, he's even money for a top three, by the way, on DK.
Could this maybe be a spot in DFS where you could consider to fade him? Only because at this price tag, you definitely need to get, I mean, there's win equity here, but it's like you need to nail the winner.
Right.
Because there's not going to be a ton of Dominator points. He hasn't won a road course race this year. Now, that's not to say he's been terrible on road courses this year.
No, I mean, he dominated it at Road America.
He led double-digit laps at both Road America and Sonoma. But
at 29 fastest laps at Road America, too, by the way.
But, you know, the secret's out. Like, everyone knows he's the clear-cut favorite to win this race. Like, I would either want to match the field or go underweight because I just think that there's significant leverage there.
Yep. I mean,
he's on a team where I've heard some people. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying it's a road course and it's Chase Elliott. Like the secret, like he's easily the active leader in wins for road courses right now. So like everybody knows this, that's who you play at road courses. So I'm agreeing that there's decent leverage in fading him. Now, if he has an issue in qualifying, there's absolutely no way you can fade him.
Correct.
Right? Like, we need him to nail qualifying and start in the top five to be able to fade him. Right?
Yeah.
Unless he starts so far back and you're just like, something's going to happen as he tries to move up. But not sure. I mean, that was the logic at the Roval, too, when he also wrecked himself going into the wall and then came back in the final 15 laps and won the race all the way from the back of the field. So, like, I agree that there's plenty of other interesting guys that you can get in this price range that you don't have to be locked into Chase Elliott.
I also think that one thing you have to consider this week is that we're getting to that point in the season where it's like some drivers know that they need to win, and there are other drivers that have one win and that are just going to be basically driving for points, and they'll stay out for the stage points at the end of each stage, while drivers that want to contend for the win will pit before the stage break just so they can maintain track position and have it at the start of the second stage, at the start of the third stage. Elliott with, I guess, three wins is now in a pretty comfortable spot where he doesn't need to race for points. He can pretty much just race for wins.
Yeah, I mean, he's the leader in wins.
Yeah.
With three. So.
Like a guy like Chase and then Ross, I mean, those are two guys easily that can just race for wins. And then I'm looking at Kyle Busch, Denny. You know, they can race for wins. They don't need to be too worried about points. I don't know how sold I am on drivers like Tyler Reddick, maybe Daniel Suarez. Yeah,
do we think Road America is a one-off? Or do we think that this track layout is similar enough to Road America in terms of it's relatively flat? There's a lot more higher speed straights here like there is at Road America. That he could be another contender.
I don't know if he can be a contender. And honestly, I'm just looking at his price tag on DraftKings. And yeah,
10,000.
10,000 is pretty tough to stomach, especially without... Like, you and I were talking before the podcast, and I said I wish DraftKings would stop pricing drivers over 10K on road courses, because without the Dominator points that are available, you're really trying to nail six drivers that can finish in the top 12 or so, and you definitely need the winner. And I understand Tyler Reddick looked great at Road America. I don't know if I'm as confident in him at Indy Road Course, because I don't know how motivated this team is for a win when they probably want to start accumulating points.
Also, it's awkward now.
That's true. Yeah.
Right, like, since he's won, he also announced he's leaving the team in a year and a half. So, like, I don't know. He looked fast at Sonoma. He started fifth, but finished 35th. So that's not great. We go down here to Coda. He started fourth, finished fifth, two laps led. That's 39 points, but he was also only 8,400. So you can swallow that at 8,400. It's a little tougher to swallow that at 10 grand. And by the way, 10 grand is the most he's been all year. The previous high was, I believe, 9,700 for, I think it was Talladega. Yeah.
I think the other thing that's going to scare me about him, too, is that he probably qualifies well as well, because at Road America, he qualified fourth. And he Sonoma did win fifth. That one. Sonoma qualified fifth and finished outside the top 30. For Coda, he qualified fourth and finished fifth with two laps led. But I don't know. If he's qualifying top five, and I don't believe that he's really in a spot where he's trying to get a win, I don't know how much I want to play him if he's 10K. And I could say the same thing almost about Cindric, Chase Briscoe, maybe Christopher Bell, as weird as that is.
I mean, yeah, so here's what it comes down to. Let's pull up the points, because the interesting part is there are clearly some key guys that don't have wins yet this year, right? So if correct, there are more than 16 Harvick guys that get wins, then it comes down to points, and you still technically have to point your way in because you'll be, you know, over the bubble. So let's sort the standings here by actual points. Because, like, Ryan Blaney, for example, doesn't have a win, but he's third in points.
This is unrelated to the race, but I'm on NASCAR's website. And underneath top headlines is NASCAR chasm reveals his face to drivers as a top headline.
Yeah, because nobody's pretty much know what he looks like. But I think he actually winds up looking like Kyle Busch, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. But, yeah, so, like, I don't know. Let's see. So, for example, Tyler Reddick is 14th in the point standings, mm-hmm. right? So he has a win. But, like, Eric Almirola is actually ahead of him in points, even though Almirola doesn't have a win. Okay. Briscoe is currently 16th in points. Just two ahead of Kurt. Like, Kurt is out right now. If 16 guys get wins, Kurt is 17th in the standings based on points. So I'm with you that some of these guys have got to start. They're either going to go for a win at a trip. Like Cindric, I don't have a problem with because he's a road racer. Like, I think Cindric thinks he can, this is his last best chance to win a second race before the playoffs. Maybe Watkins Glen. But I would think that Cindric thinks this is probably his last best chance. Not to mention that their team owner owns the track.
Yeah. But the other thing is, too, is, like, we know Kurt is not racing this weekend. And so there is more of an opportunity for those drivers to separate themselves from Kurt.
Right, correct, because Kurt's not going to win, not going to get points because he's not starting the race. If he started the race and then traded with Ty Gibbs, he would get whatever points Ty Gibbs would would get for finishing the race, but he's clearly not starting it. So, by the way, McDowell is 26th in points. So if he wins, right now he's above the top 30 cutoff line. So, I'm probably higher on Cindric this week than you, because I think he probably believes that based on the schedule that's left, this is probably his last best chance to win.
I'll also say that I don't mind Cindric at 9,100 because there are narratives for him here. As you said, this is Penske's track. Roger Penske owns it. I also liked the momentum that Cindric had before last week at Pocono. I had a lot of Cindric exposure. I couldn't believe how many of my lineups.
He fits so well at 7,200.
Yeah. And he was coming in on like six straight top 15 finishes, four of those in the top seven. So, that cost me, but I don't hate him at a road course this week.
Consider the fact that he had never raced Sonoma at any level previously until he showed up there in June, started 25th and finished 5th.
Yeah.
On a track where nobody else could pass, that guy found a way to pass 20 other people. So,
and he finished 7th at Road America, and he was 8th at COTA.
Yeah. So, and he was 9,500 at COTA. So I don't really have a problem with the 9,100. The problem is going to be that he's going to be popular, right? That's the issue there. But I do find it interesting that he is significantly more expensive than Joey Logano. Logano's 8,000 this week.
That's interesting. It's a little weird.
I mean, Logano's been outside the top 22 in four straight races now.
He's 7th in points. Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't read as a Joey Logano day. Plus, he's just not a road ringer.
No. I mean, he started 9th and finished 17th at Sonoma. And he didn't have a very good day at Road America either. And then at COTA, he started 6th and finished 31st. Because he had an issue with the curbing, if I'm not mistaken.
In general, how do you feel about Joe Gibbs Racing this week? I think the consensus is that a lot of people are worried about them just given how bad they've looked on road courses.
And they have not looked good.
No.
That's not in this for car. Sure. I mean, we all thought it was going to be a great day for, like, Truex and Kyle and Denny at Sonoma, and Truex couldn't move anywhere. Didn't do anything. And Hamlin had a terrible day there, didn't he? He finished, like, 31st.
It was a dark day for Toyota in general, because I think Bubba wrecked early. Or had a tire come off.
But, yeah, he had the tire come off there. Going up like turn two or whatever it was. I don't know. Do you think that this is a statement race given the suspension or the disqualifications that happened for them? That they're going to try to prove? Like, remember a couple of years ago when Kevin Harvick had that window, had that rear window thing where his rear window was like caving in more than it should have and people caught it and reported it and he got. I don't remember if he got like DQ'd or got point stripped or whatever, and then he came back like the next week or 2 weeks later and won and then got out of the car and pointed to the rear window like, that didn't really help me, I'm just that good. Do you think this is one of those, like, we didn't need the tape, we just had it there because we could? Like,
yeah, it wasn't a brand new car and they looked a little more competent on road courses this year. Maybe it is just becoming very concerning given how bad they've looked as a team and almost as a manufacturer. It's really difficult to buy into any Toyota this week. Kyle Busch is 98. I mean, none of them are over 10K, thank God. And sure, qualifying and where they all start could very well change everything. I mean, Denny Hamlin's 8,900, which I think is a little egregious. I love Bell at 86, but again, I do have my concerns. And as a whole, like, that could just be four drivers that I'm looking to see how they do on practice on Saturday.
Yeah, if there's anybody I would be leaning towards, it'd be Bell.
Just because he's a road course driver?
He's been better. Like, he started, if he starts inside the top 10, I think he's fine. If he starts in traffic, I'm not sure he's going to pass enough people. But he did do well here. He did well at COTA. Apologies. That would be the guy, I guess. I don't know, man. It's real hard to read him. Are you more on Kyle Busch or Truex? Taking Denny out of the equation, because I just don't like him this week.
Well, considering that Kyle Busch is only $200 more than Truex, and I've seen more speed in general in Kyle Busch's red, I'm inclined to lean Kyle Busch, even though, the finishes for both are kind of all over the place, but at least with Busch, we did see him technically get a win at Food City, but in general, his car has just been very fast this year, except for road courses. You know, he finished 29th at Road America, was 30th at Sonoma. I think he had some kind of issue there, and then he was outside
28th at COTA.
Yeah, so again, it's not great results that we're getting from this team.
No. One guy I would pay a lot of attention to would be Chase Briscoe.
See, but that's a guy I think that could just be racing for points.
Yeah, but he's from Indiana.
I know, but
like, home state, man. Like, if we give Truex the bump for home, for his 17 home courses, you got to give Briscoe a bump for one of them, right? Like, I don't know. He's qualified well at road courses and run decently, but
I don't know if I can do it. I especially don't want to do it if he does qualify well. Because he did that at Road America, and then he finished 14th.
I mean, fair. It's fair. But, like, okay, would you rather play Custer at 6,300 or Briscoe at 88?
That's going to depend on where they qualify.
Well, I mean, fact that Custer moved from 250 to 1 to 50 to 1, to win the poll, I think a lot of people...
Yeah, because he has qualified, like, top 10
Top five in like all three road courses so far. So if the argument is that they're both going to start well.
If I'm not paying attention to price tag or anything like that, because Briscoe is significantly more expensive than Custer, I'll lean Briscoe, but I'm not particularly enthralled with either.
Okay. I mean, fair. I mean, I agree that I'm not enthralled with either as well, but like,
how do you feel about Daniel Suarez as the seventh most expensive driver on DraftKings?
I mean, he's got to be there, right? I mean, they've been fast.
Four straight top 10 finishes.
Yeah, top nines, yeah.
Three of the last four have been sixth or better, and he does have a win at Sonoma.
Right, and he finished top five at Road America.
Yeah.
He led the first stage at Coda before he had a pit thing, like a pit cycle thing.
Yeah, because he stayed out at the end of stage one and gave up track position to almost everybody in the field.
Right, and then couldn't get back. And I think he got run off the track at one point on one of the results, if I'm not mistaken. So
that's a steep price tag to pay, though.
It is. It is. I think it's the most he's been all year. I see a lot.
Oh, of easily.
Sevens. See a lot of sevens and some sixes. I think the most previously was like 89. It was 89 at Quaker State, which was Atlanta. It's a weird race for him to be $8,900, but I don't know. I mean, prior to Road America, Trackhouse had won both of the road races.
Yeah, in general, like as a team, they've been awesome at road courses. I know we didn't really talk about Ross, but
no,
yeah, I mean, that's not to say Ross isn't in play. Ross is very much in play.
Even at 10-4, like if you're gonna pay up, you could pivot to Chastain off of Chase. If you're willing to pay that for Chase, I'd just pivot to Chastain. Because, like, for example, he was 10-3, and I know we don't really go off value really for road courses because there's almost no shot at hitting 5X, right? But you still want guys, like, it's a bonus if they get close to it. At Road America, Chastain put up 48 points. He was 10-3. He started 12th, finished 4th, didn't have a fastest lap, didn't have a lap lead. So that's close to 5X on a road course.
Yeah. And,
you know. He got 38 points at Sonoma, finished 7th, started 7th, three fastest laps. So he's been fast all year. And, of course, he won. Now, here's my question. Do you pay up for him, knowing that there's like 7 drivers in this race that want to wreck Chastain? Because Allmendinger is just begging to have a shot to run his ass off the road.
Yeah, probably. I mean, there have been guys that have been wanted to wreck Chastain all season.
I mean, Hamlin, Chase, Allmendinger. Pretty sure Logano wants a piece of Chastain for some reason.
Yeah.
But what are you doing with Blaney? Otherwise known as we've now reached the Ed Rouse segment.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure I'll sprinkle him in to get some exposure. Like, that's just always a guy that looks like he should have speed, should always go out and dominate, and then he doesn't really do anything but return like a modest 35 to 40 point score, and then you're left wondering, okay, why did I play Blaney again?
He's very good in debating us. Like,
yeah,
that's a really good
I guess, explanation for what he does to us every week in DFS.
Like, last weekend, I wasn't really on him because I thought the qualifying position was a little too high because he just didn't show comfortability or speed in the car in practice. I mean, not sure that him finishing 35th had all that much to do with that, but, like, I don't know.
Do you want to know how weird last year's race was?
I mean, Allmendinger won it.
Well, all right. So
as a part-time guy, by the way, he was not full, like,
Blaney finished second in that race with a driver rating of 90, which is not terrible, but it's also not earth-shattering for a guy that finished second. And he didn't finish top 10 in either of the first two stages.
Yeah,
because turn on, like, how chaotic that race was.
Because, like, turn, what was it, 7? Turn 11, maybe? I don't know. The whole turtle shell, like, ripped open cars. Like, it was unbelievable. Good news. Don't think that's going to be a problem this year, because they're either getting rid of those or they have figured out a way to bolt them better to the track.
Well, I think the issue with the first one that happened early in the race was that there was a curb or a turtle shell that they put on the track that wasn't there for practice, and the drivers didn't really know about it.
Yeah.
And then the second one was literally a curb that came, like, unhinged from the track. And that
became a ramp.
Yeah, that's the one that tore up a lot of the field.
Yeah, I mean, that was an insane. It was like Talladega level of damage on a road course.
As someone who loves this track, it was a very, just an awful look.
Yeah, for
Indianapolis.
Kind of like Coda last year in the pouring rain and Truex nearly killing
Cole Custer. We shouldn't laugh.
But we can laugh about it because they were fine, but, like, in the moment, that was not a great look. I mean, that being said about Blaney, he started 14th and finished 6th at Sonoma. He started 19th and finished 11th at Road America. And at COTA, speaking of that, he started up and finished 6th. So, again, I don't know what to do with Ryan Blaney. I really don't. I really have no idea.
Yeah, that's going to be a wait-and-see approach.
I mean, $9,200 is a fair price. I mean, he hasn't... The last time he was that was Road America. He was $9,200. And prior to that, he was $9,100 of the Coke 600. That's, like, the last few times he's been this cheap. So... Jesus, man.
I don't want to buy
into it. If we're paying up for these people, who in the hell are we paying down for?
Well, I don't hate the price tag on Allmendinger.
No, but so does, I mean, everybody and their mother's going to play Allmendinger.
Yeah, I get it. But he was $9,100 for Road America, $8,800 for Sonoma, and then we go down to, like, this is the cheapest he's been all year for a road course. I mean, it's a pretty easy position to pay up for. However, I will say that at COTA, he started 20th, finished 33rd. also wasn't a slam dunk at Sonoma either, as he started 16th, finished 19th. And then, you know, Road America, he started 21st and finished 9th, which was fine. but there were probably plays that paid off more. So it almost feels like a trap.
I would agree with that. I mean, he's going to be very popular smack in the middle of the salaries.
Yeah,
at $8,200.
I could see myself essentially going underweight on him. It's kind of hard for me to, like, dislike Kevin Harvick when they just keep pricing him as an average driver, but we know that this is a guy chasing a win.
And he's at speed.
Yeah.
I mean, last week aside, he's been speedy. I mean, he was
fast last week. He just got caught up in a wreck late.
Yeah.
He's running top 10.
Well, that's true. I mean, it's kind of the same thing that happened to him when he walled it at Gateway. But he finished 4th at Sonoma. He finished 10th at Road America. And he had a pretty good COTA, if I remember correctly. Finished 11th, but I think he was actually running slightly better than that and faded late. So, yeah, I don't get the pricing on Harvick being soft, really. I mean, I don't really understand it. So I'm fine with him. Logano, pretty much off of at this point. He's showing no speed right now. He doesn't really need wins at this point. And he's not been very good at road racing the last few years. So, but what in the heck are we doing with the other Hendrick guys? Larson, Byron, Bowman. I mean, Byron is just That guy's imploding. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I looked at his price tag and I was like, you know, that's a guy who has been so bad, but at that price tag, I feel like he's going to somehow coerce me into getting exposure here.
Yeah, he's going to be a Blaney, right? He's going to bait us because of the price tag, and you go, he can't be this bad again, right?
Yeah.
And then, God, I hope he's not that bad again, but, like, Bowman is a sneaky little road racer.
I mean, he got some help at COTA earlier in the year because Chastain and Allmendinger were going at it, and
he just picked up the pieces, yeah.
Yeah, Bowman kind of...
But, I mean, he started fifth and was arguably in the top five basically all day.
Right.
I mean, yes, the finish, he should have probably finished fourth. Probably.
Doesn't he have, like, four DNFs this year, though? Three of them coming...
Three in the last...
Very recently.
Three in the last five races, yes. Yeah, three in the last five races. He did actually finish a race at Pocono last weekend, so that's a bonus for him.
Part of me thinks like he could be one of those guys that races for points.
Yeah, probably.
But he's also cheap enough where he could pay off or be optimal with a top 12.
Yeah. Obviously, Kurt Busch at 7,700 is not racing, so please do not play him. He will remain. They're not going to take him out of the pool. They'll probably put an O next to his name starting on Thursday, but don't play him. Hopefully he gets well. Concussions aren't anything to mess with. What are we doing? We talked a little bit about McDowell earlier. Are you playing him given that it's a road course?
I'm surprised you just skipped over Chris Buescher.
I did. I did skip over Buescher, but I'm kind of pairing him with Kieslowski in a minute.
Okay, then I won't say anything. Yeah, I'm probably going to play McDowell, especially as a driver that needs wins at this point, given the penalty.
Yeah. Also,
and as you've noted plenty of times, and pretty much all of last year, I disagreed with you, but I'm changing my tune this year. He is an underrated road course driver.
Yeah, I mean, he started 27th in Dakota, finished 13th, and then at Sonoma, started 4th, finished 3rd, and then at Road America, started 6th and finished 8th. That's perfectly fine for a guy in the $7,000 range.
Yeah. I mean, especially because for those races, he was, you know, he was 68 for Road America, 71 for Sonoma, and then we go down to, and then you're 62. So, I mean, 73 is still.
I mean, it's technically the highest he's been on a road course, but it's still not that bad.
And there's still people, like, people just don't play Michael McDowell.
No.
He's way too much of a pivot or a leverage play most weeks. And if he's top 10, maybe even top 5, he's probably going to be optimal.
Yeah, I mean, he's posted 8 top 10s this year. 8.
Yeah, that's really good for him. That's a small team.
And that's a career high.
Wish Todd Gilliland could do that as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's posted a career. I mean, it's a career year for McDowell, and it just keeps getting overlooked. And yes, now he's got the penalty, but who the hell knows what they were actually trying to do? I don't know. But yeah, now we got Buescher and Kieslowski as the teammates, and Kieslowski called Buescher the most underrated driver in the
truck. He's really trying to pump the tires on Chris Buescher.
I mean, to be honest, he started 7th and finished 6th at Road America, started 3rd and finished 2nd at Sonoma.
Yeah, like it's warranted. Like Brad Kieslowski's one hell of a hype man.
Yeah. Definitely bring that guy to the club the next time you're trying to need a wingman, because that guy, he's quite helpful in that regard. Or at least he's validating why they're paying Chris Buescher. I don't know.
Kieslowski's put up 40 points on DraftKings in 2 of the 3 road courses this year.
Yep.
But granted,
one of those was thanks to using Ty Dillon as a bump stop, which I'm still bitter about if you can't tell. And yes, that has happened in March. Yeah, I think he's going to be underplayed again because Road America left a bad taste in people's mouths with Kieslowski.
Yeah, no, I get exposure to Kieslowski every week.
You've convinced you and Rouse have convinced me.
It either works out amazingly for your lineup that you play him in, or he is the one guy that goes backwards and you're like, if I just didn't play this jerk.
Yep.
But again, he's 6,800, and like he can easily pay that off and be optimal. I'm assuming he's going to probably qualify. Well, he qualified well for Road America, outside the top 20 for Sonoma, and outside the top 20 for. I'm probably hoping he qualifies 24th or something like that.
Probably, but I think there's more. There's more speed. Like I think he probably qualifies closer to the top 10 here than outside the top 20 because the speed they have in those cars now over the last like 6-7 races is way better than
they had better
earlier in the year. We clearly need some budget dudes, and yeah, Todd Gilliland and Harrison Burton are almost always in play. Just because they're, I mean, Todd Gilliland just keeps getting disrespected, to be honest. Now he's cooled down a little bit, but still, I mean, Pocono was his first finish outside the top 25 in like 2 months. So,
I don't think Gilliland has ever raced here.
It's probably true because he jumped from the trucks to the cup.
Yeah.
Trucks don't run this track. So there is that. Joey Hand, though.
Oh, God. We're doing this again.
Look, the problem is he started way too high at Road America.
Yeah. Like
39th was never going to pay off.
He can get a top 20.
Yeah.
But he starts
almost did that at Road America starting 9th. So that wasn't, again, not a great endorsement. But he does have road experience. He's a guy that just gets a little bit overlooked. Josh Williams? No, not really.
No.
Guy raced the dirt track. I don't know why you're putting a dirt racer on a road course. But
I don't know why you didn't mention Justin Haley.
Man, I'm trying to keep things secret, man.
You're throwing out Joey Hand, but you're skimming over Justin Haley?
I mean,
Haley's not a lock by any means. Like, no one in this, I guess, sub-8K range necessarily is. But Haley started 34th, but finished 24th to at least have a positive day for DFS, and that was at Road America. Finished 12th at Sonoma after starting 18th. I don't think he had the greatest day at Coda. Well, he started 9th and finished 15th, but, I mean, the negative PD only gave him 22 DraftKings points. But, I mean, he has, he's run here a few times.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you want exposure to college, you don't want the ownership of Allmendinger, then Haley is your play. Right? That's the angle. I mean, aside from, yes, he's had very good finishes. But if you want exposure to a team that clearly has fast cars on road courses and you don't want to deal with the 55% of people that are going to play Dinger, then you go with Haley to go get a colleague car at a lot cheaper price.
I agree with all of that. Sorry, I was looking at Bubba Wallace, and I keep trying to talk myself onto Bubba Wallace because I have him to finish as the top Toyota driver.
Man, I mean, this is so hard, right?
Well, in theory, it's easy because he himself has admitted that he sucks on road courses and hates them. But because he finished 35th at Road America, 36th at Sonoma, 38th at Dick. We're talking about a driver that's finished outside the top 30 in all three road courses. I guess the one thing we can hang our hat on is that he's running the Xfinity race.
And that he's got two top 10 finishes that he's coming off of.
Yeah. I mean, momentum is certainly there.
As long as the damn tire doesn't fall. Now, so Sonoma, though, he was running better until his tire fell off.
Oh, my God. He was. That's true. In his last six races, he's incorporating two road courses, but he's posted 32 points or more in four of those races, and then negative 4 points in the other two races. And those two races where he posted negatives were road courses.
Yeah, it's not great. I will grant you. I will grant you that. But I still think there are extenuating circumstances here. Let me see what the loop data stats for Sonoma are, because Bubba, okay, so his highest position was 26, so that doesn't really bode well for me. because he started 27th. Yeah. I don't know. Probably not playing very much above a. You can bet him because that was ridiculous good odds, and who the hell knows what happens with the Toyota camp.
I will say, since we've touched on almost every driver in the field, that I'm not going to completely write off Austin Dillon. I know the last time we previewed a road course race was Road America, and I mentioned him as a driver that finished 11th and 10th in the two previous road courses, and then he went out and finished 31st at RA. But because of the 11th and 10th place finishes at COTA and Sonoma, I will still give him a little attention. Would really like it if he was starting outside the top 20.
Yeah, by the way, you could also count the top 12 at Pocono last weekend, because there's a lot of drivers out there that say you shift at Pocono like you do on a road course. Now, clearly there's not right turns involved at Pocono, or shouldn't be, unless you're really driving the track way wrong. But in terms of driving style and shifting and getting into a rhythm, a lot of people say that Pocono is similar to a road course. But, look, I feel like Austin Dillon's a good guy to play on weeks I don't put him in the playbook. And that's not a knock on me. It's just Austin Dillon likes to strike when you least expect it. And if I put him in the playbook, then it's expected, and then he doesn't help us out.
He's a guy I like to play most weeks when I don't catch his reality show, which has been every week.
Yeah. You think the thing with Brad with Keselowski is going to carry over? Because nobody can explain what the hell that was about.
Yeah, their spotters didn't even know.
No. I was door bumper clear, and Brad's spotter, which is TJ Majors, was like, we were having a whole conversation on the spotter stand. Like, we didn't know who hit who, why it happened, what the hell went on. I don't know. So...
So as we wrap, God, I cannot talk. As we wrap up this podcast, do we just want to touch real quick as a reminder of strategies for road courses? Like, you don't have to prioritize dominator points. Just try to get guys that can finish well and mix in some PD. Don't be afraid to take chances on some lower owned guys, because there's going to be a lot of chalk, especially if there are some obvious PD plays.
Yeah, for sure. Indy Road tends to be one that you can pass on. Despite the curb issue last year, we did see quite a decent amount of passing and close quarter racing. And this car is supposed to, help you race better in close quarters, generally speaking. So, yeah, it's more about finish position here than really anything else. You can kind of go after lap sled, but it's not really, necessary, because there's not a huge amount of laps in this race. Let me pull up and double-check exactly how many laps there are, because I can't remember right off the top of my head here. So... you certainly want exposure to some guys that can lead some laps, but it's not imperative. So, I don't know. There's 82 total laps in this race.
Oh, that's not bad, but...
No, the stages are 15, 20, and... is that 47? 35 to 82 is 47. Yeah. So... there's a little bit more there than we thought, but still, you're not really going to hunt. I mean, it's basically next to impossible for one guy to go out and lead all of the laps. We've seen it happen in some road courses. Chase Elliott did it a few years ago at Watkins Glen, leading 80 of the 90 laps.
That's awesome.
But I don't think that's going to happen.
Not with this car. They tend to spread the dominator points out, and it
And you brought up a great point about strategies with pitting, because you're going to see people who might lead some stages and get the stage points, then pit, or you'll see some guys that give up track position at the end of the stage to go gain it to the start of the new one. So there's going to be a lot of yo-yoing in the field, I feel like, on Sunday.
I feel like if your drivers are staying out at the end of stage one, you might be screwed.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way you can win unless chaos happens, which is possible, though we're not rooting for it. I feel like staying out of stage one probably doesn't give you a great shot to win.
Also, my last question is going to be, since they essentially have to run, they're not running backwards on this course, but they are going to be entering pit road basically in reverse. So they will enter with the passenger side parallel to the wall.
Yes.
Do we know if there are any bizarre pit road rules for this week, or are they just pitting in reverse essentially?
That's a very good question.
Thanks. I have one of those every year on this show.
Let's see if I can find out any information on that.
And if you don't, not a big deal, but I think it's something that we just need to keep in mind.
I don't know that there would be, because they do have normal crews. I mean, like, we saw normal pits for the Cup race at Road America, right?
Yeah, and they pitted backwards. The same way. Yeah.
The only time we see weird ones is, like, usually Xfinity for Road America, because the Cup teams are usually across the country, so you have backup pit crews. But now you'll have Xfinity and Cup racing the same track back-to-back days. So I don't suppose that there will be. Let me see if I can find out anything about the tires here, actually. Let's see. They will run the same tire setup they ran at Road America. So, yeah. But not, it's apparently different than what we've seen at, they ran the right sides at all four tire positions at COTA. So this exact, so they switched the tire set. They ran a new tire setup at Road America, which is what's going to be on the cars this weekend at Indy Road. The right side tires for this week were run on all four tires at COTA. So the only one that's out is Sonoma. They had different tires. And there will be wet weather tires for both series. So if it rains, get ready for guys who have no idea how to road course race trying to also drive in the rain. So.
All right. Well, that's one of the more lengthy podcasts we had this year, but I think we covered everything.
I mean, there's almost everybody in the field that we talked
about. Almost everybody in the field, touch on strategy, news. Anyway, I think we did good. But unless you have anything, I'm willing to just say best of luck to you this week, Matt, and best of luck to the FA Nation.
Best of luck, FA Nation.